Radio Prague News.
The Czech Ministry of Defense has revealed terms for the largest ever military order in Czech history. President Zeman has approved stepped-up measures to fight bark beetle infestation, and Estonia replaces this country as the most attractive in the Central and Eastern European region for German investors. The Ministry of Defense on Wednesday revealed terms for a new tender for 210 tracked vehicles worth some 53 billion crowns, the largest single order in Czech military history. Four European manufacturers have been invited to submit bids to supply the infantry fighting vehicles. Price will be the decisive factor. A major condition is that a significant part of production and servicing take place in conjunction with a state enterprise run by the ministry. The Ministry of Agriculture, as of April, will have enhanced powers to regulate timber harvesting and afforestation, if necessary, to minimize damage by the ongoing bark beetle calamity. In this regard, President Miloš Zeman signed into law an amendment to the Forestry Act, saying it was clear existing extraordinary measures are insufficient. The bark beetle infestation affecting spruce forests, in particular throughout the country, is said to be the worst in 200 years. The Czech Republic considers the Golan Heights to be Israeli-occupied territory, Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček said on Wednesday. His words came after a meeting with his Lebanese counterpart in reaction to the United States having unilaterally acknowledged Israel's declared sovereignty over the Golan Heights, which were annexed in 1967. The Czech Republic is no longer the most attractive country in Central and Eastern Europe for German investors. This according to a survey by the German-Czech Chamber of Industry and Commerce released on Wednesday. Estonia now tops the list, followed by the Czech Republic and Poland. The drop in the Czech standing stems from concerns over a lack of qualified workers and weak vocational education, investors said. Growing labor costs, lack of transparency in public procurement, and corruption are also worrying. The Czech Republic has ended blank checks on beef imported from Poland as of midnight Tuesday. The change means companies accepting deliveries of Polish beef are no longer required to carry out tests for salmonella. The Agricultural Ministry said Poland had provided guarantees that it has done all it can to prevent beef unfit for human consumption from reaching the market. This Thursday, a new exhibition featuring the work of Czech-Ecuadorian artist and Holocaust survivor Trude Sojka opens at the Terezín Memorial. Entitled Maternity and Holocaust, it reflects the difficulty of being or becoming a mother for Jewish women persecuted and deported by the Nazis. And finally, the weather. Rain is in the forecast for Thursday throughout the country, with the exception of the southern Moravian region. Average daytime highs should range between 9 and 13 degrees Celsius. The outlook for Friday and Saturday is for clear skies. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, the Czech Defense Ministry opens a multi-billion crown tender for infantry fighting vehicles. In football, the Czechs lose to Brazil in a home friendly. And later on in the show, we'll introduce you to Czech pastry chef Josef Maršálek, one-time head pastry chef at the world-famous Harrods department store in London. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Ministry of Defense has released its tender specifications for a new model of infantry fighting vehicles, which are set to replace its aging BVP-2s. Four pre-selected companies were invited to the negotiations on Wednesday, and the ministry hopes to choose the supplier for its most expensive contract yet by the onset of September. Tom McEncrow has the details.
It has been nearly 5 years since the Czech Republic pledged to up its defence budget to 2% of GDP by 2024 at the NATO summit in Wales. However, defence spending has so far gone up by just over a quarter of a percentage point since the pledge was made, currently at 1.19%, according to official Ministry of Defence data. With the army in need of modernisation and pressure to increase spending as a NATO member, many new equipment contracts are being signed. On Wednesday, the Defence Ministry held negotiations with four companies who are in the race to secure what available data suggests is the army's largest procurement yet. More than 50 billion crowns is expected to be spent on 210 new infantry fighting vehicles in seven different modifications, which will replace the ageing Soviet-era BVP-2s. The tender is exempt from the country's public procurement law, but Deputy Minister Philip Tiha, who heads the ministry's Armaments and Acquisition Division, says the clear rules will be delineated.
We have to establish clear procedural steps that will delineate how the prospective suppliers will compete with each other in order to maintain the principles of non-discrimination, equal access and opportunity.
One of the conditions set out by the ministry states that the future supplier will work with Czech companies. All four prospective suppliers have already signed a memorandum with the Nový Jičín-based military engineering firm VOP, which is currently operating at a loss ranging in tens of millions of crowns and needs new commissions. The infantry fighting vehicles contract was originally supposed to be signed by the end of 2018, but in part due to a delay in selecting the law firm that will oversee the tender, it was delayed. Defence Minister Lubomír Metnar told Czech Radio what the new timeline is.
We expect the offers to come by the end of June, after which there will be a multi-round selection procedure from which we will select the winner. We would like to sign the contract by the onset of or during September.
If all goes according to plan, the army hopes the first of the new infantry vehicles will start arriving in 2021. The ministry is also planning to purchase 60 new Titus armoured vehicles in April, as well as thousands of new assault rifles and pistols. Furthermore, 50 new self-propelled artillery pieces are set to replace the ageing models in a contract worth 5 billion crowns.
That report by Tom McEncrow. Moving on now, the Czech national soccer team welcomed five-time World Cup winners Brazil to Prague for a friendly game on Tuesday night. The Czechs were all action in the first half and even took the lead. However, the Brazilians soon showed their superiority to run out 3-1 winners. Ian Willoughby reports.
It isn't every day that Czech fans get to see the likes of Robert Firmino, Thiago Silva and Philippe Coutinho in the flesh. But all three lined up alongside other stars for Brazil, one of the biggest names in world football, at Prague's Eden Stadium on Tuesday night. The game followed a 5-0 drubbing against England on Friday, and some Czech fans may have been dreaming of a famous scalp when the hosts took the lead after 37 minutes. A loose ball fell to David Pavelka, who struck it firmly past Brazil keeper Alisson for his first international goal. The midfielder had this to say after the match.
Of course, neither I nor the other guys are going to score many goals against Brazil, so it's pleasant, but it didn't have much effect. In the first half, we surprised them with our active play. We kept up the pressing and had a few breaks. But in the second half, the Brazilians responded and changed their style a bit. They showed their quality.
They did indeed. 4 minutes after the break, Firmino capitalised on a badly misplaced pass from the home side's Theodore Gebrselassie to draw the visitors level. It was 2-1 to Brazil when substitute Gabriel Jesus converted a David Neres low cross from close range on 83 minutes. Then, with the clock ticking down, they produced a moment of the samba football that's made the South Americans famous around the globe, when a move involving two back heels concluded with Jesus putting the ball away on the rebound for a final score of 3-1. Perhaps it was the rare quality on show that made the sold-out arena so quiet, with one reporter comparing the crowd to a theatre audience. In any case, the Brazilians achieved victory without ever really going into top gear. Nevertheless, Czech midfielder Lukáš Masopust took positives from the game.
It's a question as to whether they did step on the gas in the first half or whether we played so well and were so organised that we made life unpleasant for them. I think we've shown that we can play on an equal level with Brazil, and I think for both fans and players it was a great experience.
For his part, Czech manager Jaroslav Šilhavý said the team's hard work had been visible, adding that he hoped his Chargers performance had put them back in fans' good books following the debacle against England.
Ian Willoughby there reporting on a game that few Czech football fans missed last night. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature in which Brian Kennedy will introduce an outstanding Czech pastry chef.
Josef Marsalek was born in a tiny Moravian village where half the residents were his direct relatives, and the nearest shop, let alone patisserie, was well beyond walking distance. Yet his early love of baking would one day lead him to become head pastry chef at the world-famous Harrods department store in London. Now, after a sabbatical of sorts in India, he's back in Prague, gearing up to co-host the Czech version of the BBC's wildly popular show, The Great British Bake Off. By his own admission, Josef Marsalek, a burly man with a mane of curly brown hair and a wild beard to match it, has a bit of an ego, so much so that despite his prominence in the world of pastries, Czech public television nearly rejected him as a co-host of its upcoming series, Peče celá země, which loosely translates as The Whole Country is Baking, but which is strictly modeled after the BBC original. Producers, he says, were afraid he would suck up all the oxygen in the room, overshadowing the bake-off contestants. I caught up with Chef Josef in the immaculate kitchen of his Prague flat, where a tantalizing bowl of chocolate-dusted treats was laid out on the table between us. I began by asking him how a kid from a town I can't pronounce ended up baking for royalty, from the Emperor of Japan to the Queen of England, and a host of celebrities, from Sir Elton John to Czech footballer Patrick Schick.
Well, actually, it's not even a town. It's a tiny little village. There is just about 150 people living in, and more than half is my family. And actually, all of them have the same surname. And it was a beautiful childhood, and I was born in 1982, and even though there was this communist government around, but in a way it brought stability to people and to the society. And then, of course, the revolution came and the privatization came. And then my grandparents, they decided to get the land field back, and they started private farming with their children, which was my father and his brothers, my uncles. And that for me, that was the time when my childhood actually ended. So I was 10 years old, and most of the spare time I had to either spend around the farm or around working in fields and picking potatoes and feeding the cows and pigs and chickens and rabbits and what else.
Although virtually the entire extended family worked on the farm, Josef Marsalek's parents had another profession in mind for their eldest son. They thought he should become an arts and music teacher, something he had early on in life thought about doing when learning the accordion and how to paint.
And at one point of time, I made a mistake when I said I would like to do what Mrs. Krškova was doing. And she was the head teacher of the school, and she was obviously the amazing piano player. And now she is in her late 80s, and she's still somehow keeping well. And I made this mistake when I said I would like to be doing what she is doing. And that was the only sentence from my childhood my mom remembered. And then she kept reminding me, no, you'll be teacher, you'll be teacher. And even though I wanted to be chef, I wanted to make cakes.
Do you remember when you first got excited about pastries, and what was your earliest inspiration?
I think I remember very clearly once I was trying to climb the table, basically, in my grandmom's kitchen. And I just wanted to know what's going on top. And I was 3 years old. So basically, I was much smaller than the table. And I really was excited about the noise, about the smell. I could see the top of the Kugelhof. And I just couldn't see it all. And it seemed to be like extremely amazingly big, huge. And I just wanted to get involved. And the second memory I had very clear was with another grandmom. And I was around in her beautiful old kitchen. And I remember she was preparing very traditional Czech sweet, which is called rakvičky. That's basically egg yolks, which back then there was no hand mixers or anything like this, which you had to keep stirring with the sugar and vanilla sugar for 15 minutes until it gets light and fluffy and you get your volume. And I was so annoying her that I really wanted to just get it and start stirring it. And then she, at one point of time, she just gave up and she said, okay, here it is. Take it, and now 15 minutes, you have to keep stirring it. And I was 3 years old. So obviously, the mixing bowl with six eggs was bigger than me. And I think a minute later or something, my hand was going to break down because it was so difficult and so challenging. And she kept looking at me like, she said, it's a hard job, isn't it? But I wanted to get involved. And I had it very clear from the beginning that I want to do food, especially sweet. I wanted to understand how this is possible, that you go, you pick up your eggs, you go to get your sugar, flour, you do some magic around it, you mix it, and you put it somewhere, which is called oven, or and then you get some beautiful... Imagine you have a 3-4 years old child and you see a picture of wedding cake, and you have no idea how you get this done, but you see the product, and the one thing you also know is that it's edible. Which is also exciting. And you see this huge monster. And when you get older, you start searching for the little details. And, you know, there is a flowers which you can eat made out of marzipan or gold or silver.
Despite that passion, rather than enroll in a hotel and cooking school, at first, Josef Marszalek honored his parents' wishes. After grammar school, he applied to and was accepted by a number of master's programs, including at Prague's famous film school, FAMU. This and another of his early passions, animation.
I had a very strong relationship, apart of cooking, to art. One of my role players was Walt Disney once, or in Czech it was Jiří Tenka, who was actually revolutionary when it comes to animation and cartoon movies. And during the grammar school and primary school, I was really painting and sculpturing and doing all of this.
Although accepted to FAMU, he was not given a scholarship, and his family did not think they could afford to send him to study in Prague. So, for the time being, he decided to accept an offer to teach music and art history at his old grammar school. It didn't last long. By the time he was 20, he'd packed his bags for Prague and found a job working for a baking and catering firm founded by the parents of future professional footballer Patrick Schick and his supermodel sister, Christina.
They had more than, I think, 30 pastry chefs, 2 different kitchens. One was making the traditional Czech sweets, and the another one was making the cakes to order by measure, you know, for Parkastel and for Municipal House and for some Barandov ateliers. So that was a beautiful opportunity which they gave me.
Josef Marszalek showed a talent not just for creative baking, but also for managing people, and was soon studying what he had always wanted to while working in those kitchens. He earned chef's and pastry chef's qualifications in Prague and then entered a private university to study for a degree in hospitality and hotel management. It was during those 3 years in Prague that he catered to the Emperor of Japan. Soon, it would be the Queen of England.
My friend came with an amazing idea to go to UK for summer holidays. She just finished her university degree in Charles University as a physiotherapist. And she asked me if I want to go with her to Scotland or to England or somewhere and for summer to pick raspberries. And I was thinking that's a ridiculous idea.
Not quite convinced, as he doubted he could make enough for it to be worthwhile, Josef Marszalek nonetheless found work as a chef de partie, or line cook, in the kitchen of a 5-star hotel in Bath. His travel companion decided to stay home as she'd found a new boyfriend. Josef Marszalek went anyway, after a couple of years of shuttling back and forth from Bath to Prague to finish his degree. He rose up the ranks to the point where he felt stifled. He decided to take a few last temporary assignments in the weeks leading up to Christmas through the same agency that had landed him in Bath.
So I had a week in Buckingham Palace, I had a week in Tate Modern, and I had a week in House of Lords. After which Fiona called me, that was a Wednesday in the middle of November, and she said, tomorrow we have appointment in Harrods. And I said, what Harrods?
Chef Josef would end up spending nearly 8 years at that department store in Knightsbridge, then owned by Egyptian billionaire Mohammed Al-Fayed.
The moment I saw that beautiful terracotta building and the massive show windows, immediately I knew, without knowing what's happening inside, I did not know it's the world's most famous, largest department store with 1 million square feet of selling space and 7 floors, and I'm the best Harrods ambassador. I hope it's clear. And I did not know what's happening inside, but the outside, you know, the shell was talking to me very clearly that this is made for me. I didn't actually read Harrods. I was like, Joseph, that's me.
He started off making apple pies, a billion of them, he says, and went home for Christmas. After New Year's, he was offered a permanent job there, again as a lowly chef de partie. But after a massive shake-up in the staff, he was quickly promoted, and before long, the executive chef had left most of the creative work in the hands of Josef Marszalek, though he was far from senior man in the massive team of pastry chefs and bakers.
Within the next four years, basically, he promoted me, I think, 7 times. So in 4 years' time, I was his direct report. I got the offer to the very top 2 months before I resigned. And I knew that I'm not going to stay any longer, because I had a dream when I came to Harrods. I had it very clear. I had my goal. And I was thinking, okay, I want to change everything. And I think I will need 3 years. 3 years is 1,000 days. And in 1,000 days, you can do a lot. The truth was, it took me almost 5.5, 6 years.
In time, he also came to know Mohammed Al-Fayed, having brought him to tears with a surprise 180-kilo birthday cake in the shape of a sphinx with a 24-karat gold-leaf edible face in the billionaire's likeness. Everyone on the team got a 1,000-pound Harrods voucher as a bonus.
He was also famous when he saw couples, younger or older, he was famous for giving them a Viagra. And he was always very charming, and he had this kind of, you know, the sparkle in his eye, and, you know, he was very cheeky, I think is the word.
The Sphinx was by far the biggest project that Josef Marszalek has worked on. I asked him what some of the riskiest ones were.
The risky ones are always the ones with the combinations. So once you start using something people are not comfortable with, or something which is very unusual to you, I mean, if you are a chef and you work with a seafood, you would not expect to come and to see lobster and vanilla. So that's a risk, you know. But once you see lobster with the vanilla, you put already two very expensive things together. But actually, when it comes to the molecular part, then you know that the vanilla and lobster, they have very same flavor profiles. Part of the molecules are the same. That's why it works together.
He has also always liked taking risks when creating edible art pastries and cakes. For instance, using violets and roses in combination with a meringue, or tobacco with chocolate. And he is crazy for agarwood, a resin used in incense, tonka beans from a giant tree found in the Amazon rainforest, which in large amounts are deadly and so banned in some countries. And the list goes on.
Of course, this does not make much money, because people will be always buying the normal creme brulee, the tiramisu, the cheesecake, the carrot cake, of course. But this makes a story. And now, in the age of Instagram and all these Pinterest and Snapchats and all of these, this is what people take pictures of. Who is taking picture of the carrot cake anymore? Nobody. But you put the carrot cake, ginger and passion fruit flowers, and people get excited, and it's colorful and it's got a story. It has to look accessible more than too artistic, because when it looks like a Picasso on a plate, then for many people it's inaccessible. And that's the problem. You know, they see, well, what is this? Where is my cake?
After a decade working at a frenetic pace in the UK, Josef Marszalek spent a year and a half in India, helping expand and streamline a friend's French-style patisserie, but always finding time for yoga, usually at 4 a.m. He also took up painting again. In general, he says, he just slowed down and learned to appreciate life. Now he's back in Prague and gearing up for prime time, literally, as one of two admittedly very opinionated judges on the Czech version of the Great British Bake Off.
Everybody who is doing a top job is in a way controversial. You will never make everybody happy. You cannot satisfy everyone. And if you are where you are, you have to have a strong opinion. You can't tell to people to everything, I don't mind. It's okay. I don't care. No, I do care. I do mind. And it's not okay.
After choosing a dozen finalists from thousands of contestants, the show, here called Peče Celá Země, starts shooting in May, but is only set to air a year later. It is among the most expensive rights deals Czech public television has ever made, and the post-production process, he says, is massive and meticulous, a bit like the judge himself.
That report by Brian Kennedy, and I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be happy to hear from you. And of course, you can follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for listening and take care.